We're about to do our new gospel song now. It's a song called Jesus Loves Me, and it goes very much like this. I know you smoke, I know you drink that brew. I just can't abide a sinner like you, you know. God can't either, that's why I know it to be true. That Jesus loves me, but he can't stand you. I'm going straight to heaven, boys, when I die. Cause I've crossed every T and I've dotted every I. Why my preacher tells me that I'm God's kind of guy. That's why Jesus loves me, but you're gonna fry.
God loves all his children by God. That don't mean he won't incinerate some. Can't you feel those hot flames licking you?
I'm raising my kids in a righteous way. So don't you be bringing your kids over to my house to play. Why, yours will grow up stoned, left-leaning and gay. I know Jesus told me on the phone today.
Jesus loves me, this I know. And he told me where you're gonna go. There's lots of room for your kind down below. Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Jesus loves me. He loves me real good. I know he does. He called me up on the phone today and told me how much he loved me. Said, son, I love you. He speaks English pretty well, considering it's a second language for him. You can talk to him too. You know, I've got a 900 number in Tulsa you can call him at. I do it all the time. He'd be glad to hear from you. I talk to him every day. Jesus loves me, but he can't stand you.
And Jesus loves me the most of all. I know that because he sent me an email and told me that. And if you didn't get an email from Jesus, well, obviously, he doesn't love you one bit. That was the Austin Lounge Lizards, the fabulous, the one and only. I just adore them. I'll tell you, if they didn't exist, somebody would have to invent them because they're awesome. What can I say? Well, hey, this is Melody Silverwolf, and this is Positively Revolting Talk Radio. It's a rather gloomy and chilly Friday morning out there, but I do believe it's supposed to improve. It's going to be a beautiful, sunny, late spring day and a beautiful weekend, and there's all kinds of interesting things happening this weekend. Boy, got to get my tongue aligned or something. It's not working too well this morning. I have an announcement to tell you about. On Sunday, you can hear Carrie Dan from the Western Shoshone Nation and Louise Benali from the Diné Nation and Big Mountain speaking about honoring our Indigenous women activists. It's a speaking tour. They're going to speak about human rights, environmental justice, multinational accountability, the Nevada test site bombing, sovereignty, treaty rights, and UN declarations. And this is a long tour. This is the very first stop. And they're going to be appearing at St. Andrew's Church, which is at 806 Northeast Alberta at 7 o'clock. That's on Sunday. There is a sliding scale donation requested. And there's all kinds of local folks sponsoring this, a bunch of different Native groups and environmental and women's communities. And it's funded by some local folks as well. So these women are a really awesome longtime activist, the real deal. If you want to hear Indigenous women and hear their perspective from the heart of what's going on in Indigenous country, these are the women to hear. That's Sunday at 7 p.m. at St. Andrew's Church, 806 Northeast Alberta. And if you need more information, you can look at the Western Shoshone Defense Project website. That's WSDP.org. So that's happening on Sunday. And I'll be joined by my lovely co-host, Ani Haynes, in just a moment. I see her approaching the room at this very minute, and she will be here any time now. Oh, she's coming through the door. So today we're going to talk about one of the political hot potatoes du jour, which is gay marriage and the lack thereof, or the lack of the availability of said thing. You know, lots and lots and lots of, you know, rhetoric has been dispersed about the topic of gay marriage. No doubt you recall when it was briefly legal here in Multnomah County. And many people have said that, oh, we don't really need gay marriage because we could have civil unions. It's just the same. Nope, it ain't. You go tell the IRS, oh, I'm qualified to file jointly with my spouse because we have a civil union. Boop. Your spouse dies and you want to have their Social Security. Boop. If you had that civil union, it don't mean nothing, baby. You got to have the marriage certificate to get it. That's not fair. That's discrimination. And George Bush wants to write discrimination into the Constitution, which would be a first in the history of our country. And, of course, that didn't happen the other day, but I'm sure that they are going to plan on tossing the hot potato around some more because it is so valuable to distract us from what's really going on.
As they say, the debate will rage on even if the Senate has defeated it so narrowly.
That's right. So narrowly, my butt. They had to have a two-thirds majority.
I understand. So, you know, there's a few things about this. First of all, it is June, the month that us queers everywhere celebrate our lives and know that for 1 month we have some positive PR. So the fact there's how do I begin without just sputtering?
Well, you might as well start sputtering now because I know you will later.
I know, really no need to delay. You know, to use queer marriage to bring it to the floor, first of all, in June, before the anniversary of Stonewall, well, it's galling. I mean, just right there. Second of all, to talk about it at all as if it is an important issue of urgent national, urgent national urgency. As though
wow.
It is an actual urgency. It's kind of like last week, Melody, when you wanted to talk about people feeling feelings. You know, it's one of those things where it's like, I don't even understand how it is just not the most transparent maneuver in the world to declare the possibility lurking out there somewhere of queer people getting married.
Gays are ruining America. They're destroying.
That
they're destroying
is our national priority.
Marriage. I know, and it is an insult.
You have to kind of look at that in light of, you know, everything else that's going on. So, as I'm like trying to weigh out, you know, ethical quandaries and moral dilemmas, just follow me if you will for a moment. Now, I happen to be a queer that happens to be married, and so I kind of feel, you know, well, personally, like this time it's personal, right? So.
Oh, you shouldn't take it personally, sister.
Yeah, this time it's personal. So I look at my family.
Isn't that a line from a Clint Eastwood movie?
Yes. I don't know if it's Clint Eastwood, and I've never seen the movie, but I've seen many people throw the line around, and therefore I will too. You know, I figure it like this, Melody. I got this little family, right, and we love each other, and we support each other, and Teresa and I just celebrated our 12th anniversary of getting together in the first place. That's 12 years of creating family with the intention explicitly to love and support one another through good times and bad and yada, yada, yada. And you have that, and I hear from people that it's threatening America. That our
yes.
family loving each other and supporting each other is threatening America. And I hear that me and Teresa loving each other is a moral evil.
It's threatening the institution of marriage, which our country is founded on.
Yeah, which
God
knows.
It says in the Constitution our country is founded on marriage, you know.
I'm sorry, but straight people have been ruining the institution of marriage just fine without my help.
Does the name Britney Spears mean anything to you?
Why pick one?
Well, I know.
Look at the divorce rate. No, seriously. Look at the divorce rate for a moment.
Of course.
So, you know, it's just like, okay, all right, now Okay, Ani and Teresa loving each other, raising a family, evil. Now,
but it's okay for those polygamous guys to marry 13-year-olds.
No, that's not where I'm going. Because that, you know, is not really around mainstream law at all. So, again, if I could, just set it up that Teresa and I loving each other, evil. But, say, a little troop of Marines going into Haditha and killing 24 civilians at close range.
That's patriotic.
By shooting babies and old folks in the face at close range in a retaliatory strike for a Marine being killed by a bomb.
Even a guy in a wheelchair.
It was grandpa in a wheelchair shot 3 times while holding the Quran. Baby with powder burns on face. Right? That's good. That's American. That's
wave
the war
the
in Iraq. We got to protect America. We're making America stronger. Teresa and I loving each other makes America weaker. Committing war crimes makes America stronger.
Well, and it dishonors marriage, you know, because all those people out there who are married, you know, because you and Teresa are together, you've ruined their lives. They don't even know you, but somehow
but
you've
somehow
magically
another,
ruined their lives.
It's
yes.
My aura. My aura. It reaches out to them. And it
reminds me of that song that Peg Millett sings, I've Seen Your Aura, and It's Ugly.
And it,
yeah.
And it interferes with their straightness somehow because I am just so utterly
yes.
powerful
yes,
and
does.
Groovy that my aura just sort of oozes into
maybe
straight
you're
marriages
stealing
everywhere.
Their mojo. Maybe that's what's happening.
Maybe I am.
Maybe
that's why Viagra's on the rise.
Oh, that was a bad pun. That was a really bad pun.
I didn't even mean that.
Well, you know, and then you know, the ridiculous claims that are made about how allowing gays to marry is destroying the institution of marriage, I think this just really highlights it. The other day, during the debate in the Senate, there was a bunch of fundy wackos on the Capitol steps, you know, going, yes, go Congress, we need to save marriage from the gays. And this woman had a sign that said, stop same-sex marriage, it endorses masturbation. Now, think about that one for a while.
Boggles
if that
my
makes
mind.
Any sense to you, if somebody could explain how that makes one lick of sense, I'd sure like to hear it. I
perhaps
think some of these people are really unclear on the concept.
Or something. I don't know.
I don't know what they think gays do.
I think
but
it might be one of those if
confused.
You have to ask, you'll never know things. Maybe that's it.
Well, I just think that there's a lot of rampant, I mean, it's just, it's completely illogical. How in the world could a gay couple marrying have anything to do with some stranger they don't even know?
Best not to ponder it too much because, in fact, it makes no damn sense. Why does it make no damn sense? And yet it's here in the public fore because it's a distraction technique. All things to attract and distract, as the disposable heroes of hypocrisy say. You know, that is what is going on.
And one
Bush's
of my favorites,
polls are in the toilet, you know, like mm-hmm. the administration's mm-hmm. ratings from the American public have really just gone where few ratings have gone before in the presidential realm. We have a war that is going very, very badly. We have charges of war crimes that are being made now very, very publicly.
An economy that's completely disintegrating.
Tanked, shall we say, as most of our actual strength, the strong workforce base has been outsourced and downsized and is going more and more into the ever-increasingly lucrative pockets of the CEOs. Witness the ExxonMobil mm-hmm. fella, whose name is happily escaping me at this moment of my life, who, you know, makes more in an hour than I'm going to make
they
in
call
my
him,
entire life.
They call him Fat Bastard, but I don't know. I can't remember what his
yeah,
real name
right,
is.
Exactly. That's I was trying to avoid that, but there it is.
But, you know, the thing that disturbs me the most is these arguments against gay marriage are the exact verbatim arguments that were made against interracial marriage.
Yep.
And before that, they were made against women having the right to own property.
Uh-huh, or the right to vote.
And they were made against slavery, that it was unnatural, that God wanted it that way. It said so in the Bible.
If
blah,
women
blah, blah.
Started voting, mm-hmm. remember, if women started voting, it would make us sterile mm-hmm. because it would put too much pressure on our ovaries.
And remember that, you know,
remember
interracial
that.
Marriage was immoral and against God's plan, and we were all going to burn in hell if we allowed black women and white men to look at each other or whatever the heck it was. Well, you know, as a former person who participated in interracial marriage, you know, I'd like to say I just really take deep and abiding offense to that. And I think that I think that gay people should be outraged. I mean, this is blatant discrimination.
I'm outraged.
It's a violation of the 14th Amendment.
I'm right there with you. So there's this article online, Journal and Courier Online. It says, the distraction of debating gay marriage. This is from, oh my gosh, this is from Indiana, I do believe.
That noted liberal bastion.
Yes. You know, it's like, yeah, I'm pretty happy about this, actually. Congressional Republicans and President Bush need a lesson in priorities. It goes on to say, what is the most pressing issue for the U.S.? Is it the war in Iraq? Is it terrorism in general? The possibility of nukes in Iran or North Korea? Access to health care? Immigration? The high cost of fuel? Rebuilding areas struck by Hurricane Katrina? Preparing for the next disaster? Inflation? Skyrocketing deficits? Balancing personal liberties with national security? Republican leadership swept the above issues aside this week to devote their energies to banning civil marriage for gay and lesbian couples. Why would it come up now? It wouldn't be a ploy to manipulate the American public during an election year, would it?
Oh, heck no.
It surely has nothing to do with Republicans being worried about losing control of Congress, nor does it have anything to do with Republicans already betraying their principles of fiscal responsibility and keeping government out of private lives, nor would it be related to President Bush's sagging poll numbers, right? Regardless of one's feelings toward gay marriage, the attempt to distract the American public from important issues is an insult. Band supporters say that defining marriage as one man and one woman will affect generations. But so will the war on terror, keeping nuclear weapons out of the wrong hands. I'll go ahead and put in my editorial aside. Could someone tell me what the right hands to hold nuclear weapons are? I'd like to know. Back to the article.
I'm and preserving Hans Blix. We should get rid of him.
Yep. Preserving personal liberties and the other issues that were previously mentioned.
Well, because, you know, if gay people are allowed to marry, then humanity will die out on this planet, you see, because then nobody will have children because, you know, all these feminazi women are selfish and won't have any kids. And then if gays get married, then they won't have any kids either and we'll all die out and then something will happen and God won't be happy. I mean, it just makes no sense at all, really.
It makes no sense at
all. And, you know, you'd think that these people were thinking that they were going to have a gay marriage themselves. Like, we're going to make you divorce your spouse and marry a person of the same sex. No.
Huh.
That's not going to happen.
Huh.
Maybe some of them secretly wish they could do that. I don't know.
So, anyway, I want to hear what you have to think about this. 503-231-8187 is the number to call this morning if you would like to talk with us. We are talking about the sleight of hand of debating a constitutional amendment to ban queer marriage. And, okay, now here's the other irony. Okay, so we're losing a war, we're committing war crimes, we're all kinds of troubled at home when it mm-hmm. comes to funding education and health care, but we don't have time for that. We have time to talk about queer marriage. Okay, so that's one level of irony. Here's another level of irony. Remember what the really hot political movement was in about 1980, call it one? It also had to do with the constitutional amendment.
Oh, that was maybe the ERA?
That would be the one. You know,
it was
actually
before that, but...
Well, see, in 81, I started working on it personally. I think it was finally defeated in 82 or 83.
In 1976, I was working with a group called the ERA 76 Telethon Committee, so it was happening before
that. In 76, I was 10. But, you know, in 82, I was 16, and I started petitioning and trying to talk to people about, you know, bringing women into the Constitution through the Equal Rights Amendment. And I was told, oh, that's unnecessary. You don't need a constitutional amendment for that. We just understand all people are equal.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So we don't need a constitutional amendment to guarantee my civil rights as a woman.
Mm-hmm.
But we do need a constitutional mm-hmm. amendment to take away mm-hmm. any possibility of me actually getting to marry the person I love.
Right.
In a legal and state-recognized
yes.
way.
But by the way, there's yet,
well, the
there's
heck
yet another irony. Yet another irony. I have to say, I know I'm not the only person who's disturbed by this. I've been very disturbed by seeing on TV and reading about on the internet certain ministers, African-American ministers specifically, a number of whom have been very visibly lending their support to the people who seek to ban gay marriage. And I realize that many African-American churches are quite socially conservative and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. However, I think this is a deep and painful irony that these individuals who oh so recently were subjected to very differential treatment, very brutal treatment by the government, and required an entire civil rights movement and an entire rethinking of several generations' time to be accorded their full rights as individuals, are dead opposed to gay marriage, and that's fine. I respect that view, but they seek to discriminate against others, and they don't see the irony in it. They don't see that civil rights, the civil rights movement for them, has anything to do with gay people, and they're insulted at the concept that, well, we're black and we can't change that, but, you know, gays could change. They could choose another path. Well, I don't buy that, because religion is protected in the Constitution. It's voluntary. If I choose to be a whatever it is, and my Sabbath is on every Tuesday, and therefore I say to my employer, I can't work on Tuesdays because it's my Sabbath, and you can't fire me because it's religious discrimination, well, you know, I could choose not to be that religion. And so I don't think that argument flies, and I'm very disturbed that persons of color, you would think, would realize that passing a constitutional amendment to discriminate against a group of people is not the right thing to do.
I don't actually believe that any group is safe from being manipulated.
No, I don't either. And certainly not all African Americans agree with these beliefs.
And as, you know, Joanne Bowman had a brilliant show yesterday morning about addressing homophobia within the African American community. And I think that that was really wonderful, and that's a really important and positive step.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that is another important part of working out some solidarity.
I totally agree.
And that I want to focus specifically on the powers that be, the administration's disingenuous advancement of this distracting debate. I want to focus on that and not necessarily groups that are being duped in the struggle. And but I agree with you. I mean, the irony is there. It's rich. And it's something that we need to work out as communities and struggle together and really build some solidarity and some understanding. I know, for example, I remember in the late 80s, early 90s, it was early 90s, that the lesbian Avengers started practicing some very on-the-ground solidarity work with migrant farm workers who were not particularly lesbian approving,
yes,
you know, at the beginning. But because there were some very serious life-threatening issues for the farm workers, the Lesbian Avengers said, you know, we're there. This is something that we can help you with,
mm-hmm.
that we can provide some extra
mm-hmm.
security and some witness to,
mm-hmm.
and we will be there for you. And it doesn't matter what you think of me right now. We'll talk about that later. But we will be there for you.
And I think that's a really good plan. I guess I'm just really amazed.
And I've watched a huge, huge amount of dialogue and a wondrous amount of folks moving towards accepting each other.
I think that's really a huge improvement. And I guess I'm really disturbed that, especially after Katrina and the god-awful way that the administration failed to respond, that any African-American cultural institution could approve or side with George W. Bush. I'm just amazed. But, you know, but there you have it.
I'm stunned every day anew by a host of things.
Yes.
So I think we have a caller, 503-231-8187. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Hi. Good morning.
Hi. Well, I just want to go on record as a married straight person that Ani and Teresa being married has not ruined my life or destroyed my marriage in any way whatsoever.
All
and
right.
You probably don't even
I agree with y'all that I think this, what the administration is wanting is for people to be ruled by fear, mm-hmm. because fearful people are not really able to think clearly and analyze mm-hmm. their situation.
Right.
And there's a lot of stirring up fear to distract us. So the less people can respond from fear, and the more from love, the better.
Yes.
And that's pretty much all I wanted to say. So thanks for taking my call.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. Thanks for confirming that you don't spend undue time worrying about Teresa and I existing.
Really? I mean, I think that would be such a waste of time. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Well, and you haven't destroyed... Well, somehow you failed to destroy their marriage. I guess you have to work harder.
Well, could be, in fact, that... I'm not destroying straight marriages. Could be. This woman speaks the truth, sister.
Could be.
Could be.
But maybe other gay couples are trying to destroy her marriage. You never know.
No? No, I don't think so.
I really...
Let's go ahead and let's hear from another...
Blows my mind.
Let's hear from another listener. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi.
Just a little comment about distracting the American public from what's actually, you know, more salient at the moment. I'm a medical doctor in Portland, and I watched the media make a lot of fuss about flesh-eating bacteria about 10 years ago. And what that is this thing called necrotizing fasciitis that's been around for about 100 years.
Right.
I mean, that we've known about. Then I watched people stockpiling Cipro, because they said that there was going to be, you know, terrorists using anthrax against
us. Right.
I had to learn about SARS, and I had to learn about West Nile virus, you know, and now it's going to be the bird flu pandemic. And, you know, you know, what's really killing Americans, smoking 300,000 a year, alcohol 100,000 a year, you know, lifestyle 80,000. Handguns, you can look these numbers up. They're reproducible all over the place. You know, handguns, 30,000 a year. Drugs, 10,000. Terrorists, you know, a couple hundred if you average it out.
Right.
You know, so bird flu, you know, is just, it's something to write articles about and to distract the American public from this unjust war.
I think that's absolutely true.
Well, that's my two cents worth.
Hey, thank you so much for your call this morning.
Thanks.
It's true. Distractions come in many forms. And 503-231-8187, the number to call to join us on the air. I'm Ani.
I'm Melody.
And look at that. It is just shy of 8 o'clock in the morning, and you are listening to KBOO-FM 90.7, your very, very own community radio station. Good morning to you.
Good morning to you.
Good morning, LJ.
How are you?
You're positively revolting. How are you?
Oh, I knew that. It would disgust me if you guys were not positively revolting. I wouldn't listen to you.
Somebody sent us a fan letter one time addressed to absolutely disgusting talk radio.
Which is entirely different.
Yeah. I'm not sure if it was an honest mistake or it was a joke.
Onwards and upwards. Ben, what did you call about, friend?
Okay, here's the deal, friend. Miss Haynes.
Yes, dear.
I am scandalized about you and Teresa.
Goodness. Goodness.
I have to tell you, I have met your progeny. I've spoken to her a couple of times. She is a happy, well-adjusted young person. How dare you and Teresa do this?
It's really an outrage.
She happens to be creative and bright too.
It's really an outrage. They're filling the planet with these happy people.
Oh, come on,
the next generation.
What are you guys trying to do? Break the stereotype? Shame on you.
You know, and I just have to say a shout out because my brilliant and delightful kid is turning 18 on Monday.
Who's to figure?
My.
So.
God. Anyway, okay, a quick couple of things. I was down at the Fun Center last night.
Ah, yes.
Miss Haynes, Miss Overwolf, I felt so safe and so reassured looking at all of those huge killing machines sitting in our river.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
It made me feel so safe. So secure.
The ships that bring the sailors upstream to spawn, like we barge the salmon back and forth, you know?
Right. And I wanted to let the young folks know that the waterfront area is thick with military recruiters.
Yeah. Oh, no doubt.
Oh, and they are pulling out all the stops.
Did they try to recruit you?
I try to volunteer, but... But they said, no old curmudgeons allowed.
Oh, well.
Yeah, they said, you and Joe Uris, we don't want to see you.
But they're calling people back. I saw a lady on TV who's 50 years old, and she'd been called back. She was in the National Guard or something.
Oh. Yeah. Well, I'm 67. I might be
a little old curmudgeon.
So anyway, what I wanted the young folks to be mindful of is that if you do decide to sign on the dotted line, please, please, please read the fine print.
Oh, yeah.
Okay? Because your four-year hitch is really an eight-year hitch. So, yeah. And these guys will tell you anything to get you to sign.
Oh, absolutely.
And they lie like rugs wall to wall. So just watch your butt.
True enough. All right. Thank you very much.
Have a great day.
You too.
Bye-bye.
And if you're gay, you definitely shouldn't sign up unless you want to pretend that you're somebody else for the foreseeable future.
The irony's there. Okay. Let's go ahead and talk to another caller. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
Another level of rich irony is the conservative gay movement. Can you talk about that?
The log cabin Republicans?
Gays that support George Bush.
Yeah,
I don't get it.
I was going to say, I guess I could talk about it, but I don't understand it. And all I can say is in any oppressed minority, there are those that try to ally themselves with the oppressor. Because they like privilege, because they feel it's safer.
It's a Stockholm syndrome? I don't know.
I don't know either. And that's really about all I can possibly say about it. Not every queer person is politically enlightened, as I have found out myself in my own life. And it saddens me.
I remember when I first made that realization, it was presented to me very, very forcefully. One time I went to the Michigan Women's Music
Festival.
That's
where I figured it out, too.
I was so shocked. I was so shocked to go to this women's music festival and see all these women there who were like, they weren't feminists. I was just shocked.
That was the moment that I realized that lesbians did not necessarily
have to be feminists.
Yeah.
I was just shocked, really. I truly was.
Yeah.
I guess I was really naive or something.
For me, it was 1989.
It was 1988.
Oh, wait. I'm sorry. 1989 was my last year.
No, it was 88 that I was there, and you were there, too.
87. 87 was the year that the hammer got sort of thrown through my mirror.
The next year I went, and I was equally hornswoggled, just like, how could all this... Here is a sea of lesbians, and some of them, no doubt, were definitely feminists, but so many of them were not.
Oh, many of them were amazingly brilliant, organizing feminists.
I couldn't fathom why or how you'd be a lesbian and not be a feminist. I just didn't. So it was like...
I don't know. It's
mind-boggling to me.
It's a puzzle. Well, there you go. And with that, we move on. Good morning to our next caller.
Oh, we have no next caller. Well, hey, you could be our next caller at 503-231-8187. We are discussing gay marriage and the move by the Bush administration to, codify discrimination against gay people, which is just disgusting, really.
And we're looking at other things that might want to be on our national priority screen, like access to health care.
Yeah, you think?
Well, stopping an unjust, illegal, and genocidal war.
Oh, and, you know, our infant mortality rate is, like, in the basement. I mean, we are behind every country but, like, Chad or something. It's just really, it's embarrassing.
Yes.
We have the highest infant mortality rate of any so-called developed nation on the planet. That is really telling.
Yes.
I mean, that just says volumes about, and this is how, you know, we want to support our future generations by, you know, like having them, you know, be born into a world where there's no prenatal care, where there's no health care for babies and their mothers. It's just ridiculous.
And actually to force them to be born because we don't have abortion rights.
Or to, you know, or because pharmacists won't dispense emergency contraception because he or she doesn't believe in it.
Because after all, every sperm is sacred until fully gestated and then birthed, in which case, come on, slacker, you know, support yourself. So for the women of Iraq, speaking of feminism, there's an item that I read today on The Independent. For the women of Iraq, the war is just beginning. And just to give you a little bit about what is coming out more and more publicly all the time, the women of Basra have disappeared. 3 years after the U.S.-led invasion of Iraq, women's secular freedoms, once the envy of women across the Middle East, because remember, Iraq was the country with the most equality, egalitarianism between the genders.
High percentage of women attending college, et cetera, et cetera.
Once the envy of women across the Middle East, those rights, those secular freedoms have now been snatched away because of militant Islam rising in the country following the invasion and occupation. Across Iraq, a bloody and relentless oppression of women has taken hold. Many women had their heads shaved for refusing to wear a scarf, or have been stoned in the street for wearing makeup. Others have been kidnapped and murdered for crimes that are being labeled simply as inappropriate behavior. The insurrection against the fragile and barely functioning state has left the country prey to extremists whose notion of freedom does not extend to women. In the British-occupied South, where Muqtada al-Sadr's Mahdi army retains a strong stranglehold, women insist on the situation is at its worst. Here they are forced to live behind closed doors, only to emerge concealed behind scarves, hidden behind husbands and fathers. Even wearing a pair of trousers is considered an act of defiance and is punishable by death.
And what if you don't have a husband or a father anymore?
Stay inside. Seriously.
Mm-hmm, that's what I'm saying. I mean, how can you function in a war-torn country when you can't even go out to get water or food or anything because you have no husband and father anymore?
One Basra woman, known only as Dr. Kefaya, was working in the Women and Children's Hospital unit at the City University when she started receiving threats from extremists. She defied them, and one day a man walked into the building and murdered her. Iman Aziz, one of the first women to speak publicly about the dangers, said, "There are 5 people on the death list with Dr. Kefaya. They were threatened. If you continue working, you will be killed. Many of the women are too afraid to complain, but fearful that their rights will be eroded for good, some have taken the courageous step of speaking out." Dr. Kefaya was one of the many professional women murdered in recent months. Speaking to The Independent near Saddam's own palace in the middle of Basra, Mrs. Aziz reeled off the names of other dead friends. 3 of her university class had been killed since the invasion. "My friend Shada and her sister, they were threatened. One day they returned to their house with 2 other women. They were all shot." Her language is chillingly perfunctory. "And my friend Lubna, she was with her fiancé. They shot him in the arm and then they killed her in front of them," she explained. "There were 2 sisters who worked in the laundry of Basra Palace at the base." With a shrug, she briefly detailed each life in short. So,
this is the kind of thing that, you know, we're creating in Iraq.
Welcome to American freedom.
And supposedly Laura Bush is so concerned about the rights of women over there. Well, she sure is doing a bang-up job protecting them, isn't she?
Bang-up?
I'm impressed. 503-231-8187. I am just amazed that the phones are so quiet this morning.
But, you know, again, this is the sort of horror.
Yes.
That if we were talking about this as a nation, you know, I really believe that a groundswell of outrage would take hold and would stop the war.
Well, I agree.
So, again, instead we're being distracted, because remember that article I got from The Independent UK.
We hear nothing about this on the news. We don't see pictures of what is happening over there. However, last night, even on Keith Olbermann, which is the one news show worth watching on television, in my humble opinion, on mainstream TV, even on Keith Olbermann, we were subjected to repeated views of the dead face of Zarqawi. Like, you know, if we just show his, like, you know, dead bloody face enough, that'll somehow convince you he's really... I mean, what is up with that?
All things to attract and distract. So it is 11 minutes after 8 o'clock in the morning. 503-231-8187. And good morning to you. You are on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I was wondering if you were interested in an opinion from the other side of the aisle.
Oh, sure.
Okay. I agreed with you about the distraction part on the Defense of Marriage Amendment thing.
Uh-huh.
But I think the issue that they're, the burning issue on the right side of the aisle right now happens to be immigration. And that's for whatever reason, they've decided not to listen to what I think is a majority of Americans. And they're attempting to distract people with this. We'll do another conservative issue.
Well, wait, I have a question about immigration. What has happened recently that has made it so burning? I mean, it's immigration has been going on illegal
from your
folks have been coming in from Mexico for as long as I've been alive and long before that. So, what has all of a sudden happened to make it a burning issue?
Well, it isn't all of a sudden. It's been a burning issue for quite some time with a lot of people.
Really? But it didn't come up in either of the last two presidential elections. I don't remember it being an issue. The last time we had a senatorial election, that wasn't a thing that was being discussed. Why do you think no one's discussed it before if it's such a burning issue?
Well, because the government, you might be under the impression that somehow or another people on the right wing, that the government informs the debate according to what people want. That what's happening right now is a grassroots movement. They didn't want to deal with the issue. They didn't want the issue brought up.
A grassroots movement? You mean people have brought it to the attention of their senators and congressmen that this is outrageous, you need to stop it?
Of course.
And I don't remember it being a subject of great debate before. Where did it come from?
Well, it's been around for some years. The Minutemen have been doing their little number. That's
true. There are vigilantes that have been out patrolling that border, which I have to say strikes me as more racist than concerned about immigration, because do you have any idea how many immigrants cross without documentation from Canada?
And also, the largest number of illegal immigrants by far in America today are from Ireland. There's millions and millions and millions of them, especially in New York City. They're here undocumented with illegal papers, and there's far more of them, actually, than there are, white immigrants than there are people from Mexico.
So I take it you're operating under the assumption that I'm racist, then?
No, I'm just saying. I just don't understand, if it's not a distraction issue, my personal opinion is that immigration has become more of an issue since our economy is so in the toilet because all of our jobs have gone overseas. I think that now that the economy is so bad, that's why people are all of a sudden going, wait a minute, what are all these illegal immigrants doing here working at jobs that I could be working at because people are desperate for money? That's what I think is going on.
Well, I don't. First off, that would be part of the issue, and I certainly am not in favor of shipping American jobs overseas, since I run a business here in America, and when American manufacturing goes overseas, it hurts me and hurts my employees. So,
absolutely does.
And I've been pretty adamant. I guess what I'm trying to say is that just because conservatives or libertarians, and I consider myself more of a libertarian than a conservative, view something as an important issue, that doesn't mean that the national press or the national parties respond to those issues. They manipulate and they control the debate as much as they can to put it around issues that they favor.
Well, I agree with that.
Whether it agrees with the base or not, which is why the Republicans are in trouble right now, because the base is telling them to close the borders. And by the way, we want the northern border closed too, not just the southern. And we want the illegal immigration issue dealt with. And we're upset with them because they're ignoring us.
Well,
the House is not, but the Senate is.
My take on the illegal immigration is that the way to fix it is to repeal NAFTA and CAFTA and GATT, and that would be a huge start.
And
people
restore,
come here out of desperation,
and
not
restore
desire.
The economies.
Yeah,
okay.
Exactly.
Well, I grew up in South America. Okay, I lived there for 7 years. Now, grant you, that was back in the 60s. I'm completely fluent in Spanish, and I'm completely familiar with Latino culture. I understand the difficulties of what goes on in Latin America, and I completely sympathize with those people. They live in countries where there is no hope, there is no justice, and they are trying to take care of their families, and they see an opportunity here in the United States to make a living for themselves, and they're taking it.
I don't blame them. I think we'd probably all do the same thing.
And I would do the same thing. However, having said that, that still doesn't mean that I want my country swamped. I don't want us to be bilingual. This is an English-speaking country.
Well, it's a many-language-speaking country.
It's a multi-language country, and I think it's important to understand that.
I don't think that's going to change.
And I think you certainly are entitled to all of your opinions, and I totally support your right to speak them.
Right.
But I also have to say that our country is made richer when we actually learn from each other and that language is a shared thing. We are a multilingual society. We are a country of immigrants. My mother came from a different country. Her grandmother, her mother followed her over here after most of the rest of the kids came to the U.S. when their city was destroyed during World War II. You know, it's one of those things. We are a country of immigrants. Unless you are a Native American, your family got here somehow. And generally, it was because of oppression or in response to economic conditions.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you want to look at lessening the amount of people that are looking for opportunity here, we need to work to make conditions better elsewhere.
Exactly. Well, and also there's many, many Asian languages spoken in America, and that's not going to stop. Most Asian families who have immigrated here recently cling to their cultural, their cultural beliefs, and they still speak their native language at home, and that's not going to change. I don't think that's a threat to America.
It's kind of like my marriage. Well, wait a minute. Hold on. We gave you a long time to talk.
Okay.
So, hold on. My last point that I really want to make here is kind of like me and Teresa being married doesn't really threaten two straight people also engaged in a loving and supportive relationship. And I truly believe that to my very toenails. I cannot fathom it being any other way. Somebody speaking Spanish or Thai or French or, you know, any of a number of indigenous languages,
whatever,
does not threaten my ability to, go about my daily life.
No.
And if I choose to actually try to learn bits of languages or try to become fully bilingual, then so much the better. I have more people I can communicate with. But I, again, don't see how it's detracting from my life.
I've heard a lot of people.
Other people are speaking languages other than English in my country.
I've heard a lot of people complain about going to places or phoning up, and they said they couldn't understand the person on the phone or the counter. They didn't speak very good English. If it really bothers you that much, go somewhere else.
Well, and I have to say this about that, because that drives me insane. When we're looking at immigrant culture, and again, you know, I'm talking as the daughter of an immigrant, so immigrant culture is something that I'm there with. When we're talking about immigrant culture, folks that come to this country struggle so hard to learn different ways, to learn different languages, to learn the currency, to learn the customs, to learn the laws.
Mm-hmm.
We, you know, immigrants struggle so hard. And if it's someone practicing their language, I would love to see most Americans go to another country for just a week and attempt to communicate. Your accent's going to be way off.
Yes.
Right?
They'll find it very
como
amusing. Como
estas ustedes?
Even if you can speak good, whatever it is, they'll laugh at your accent. And,
right.
You know,
well, I don't know. I don't know the people that laugh.
No, eso no es la verdad. Usted está equivocada.
Sure. And as you said.
Yo hablo español perfectamente.
Sure.
Yo tengo el acento perfecto.
Right.
Y yo soy puro gringo de la madre.
See?
Absolutely 100%
North America. I absolutely, yes. Right. But you also have said that you had the experience of living in South America for 7 years as a child.
And
so that's awesome.
And people would be very gratified that you were even trying to speak Spanish, even if you did
but
it badly.
In my experience as a person in the U.S.,
mm-hmm.
when I'm trying to speak with somebody who is from another country, and first of all, you know, if they're from a country that's speaking Spanish, then I can communicate minimally from my English, base.
Don't, because I am not bilingual,
but I am working towards it because I think it's really important.
Yes, it is.
To be able to communicate with people in my community, and we now have many Spanish speakers in my community. Kind of like I moved into a neighborhood that is a whole lot of Russian
mm-hmm.
Immigrants. And I happen to have a little Russian ability to speak a little Russian. So I try to communicate with immigrants in the languages they speak. I try. And happily, if it's Spanish or Russian, I have a little bit. And what I've noticed is these people who are immigrants, tend to be infinitely patient with me. Trying,
trying to talk to them.
Okay, I've used the wrong word. I've just asked someone for the name of their telephone instead of the number of their telephone. My accent is off, but I'm trying. And I see people struggling with me like, oh, wait, say that again. I'm not quite getting you. You know, and so I'm patient, and I try.
It reminds me of the scene in my Big Fat Greek Wedding.
Hold on.
He keeps misspeaking Greek.
Hold on. And I think it's only fair that people who speak English as their native language try to engage in the same amount of patience to understand somebody who is speaking with an accent that you're not familiar with. Because really, familiarity helps us communicate. The more we listen to accents we are not familiar with right now, the easier it will be for us to understand those accents later. And that's only to all of our benefit, because we need to communicate with each other. We need each other. We're in community together. And I thank you very much for your call this morning. And let's go ahead and take our next caller. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes.
That's you. You're on the air.
Oh.
You have to turn your radio off because there's a delay.
And oh, when did you start the delay?
Oh, like a month ago.
Well, we really live in a parallel universe, you see, and we're like, you know, 10 seconds different. I'm just joking.
Boy, you're operating like the other radio station.
No, it's
now.
Not that kind of a delay. It has something to do with our transmitter. I'm not sure what it is.
There's two kinds of delays. Mm-hmm. One is to do with a digital transmitter, mm-hmm. and one is actually looking at our ability to bleep, because I don't know if anyone else noticed this, but talking about our national priorities, I'm glad we got to this. Fines for indecency
are about to be.
I think
increased tenfold.
Some legislative body passed that actually last night,
but it hasn't become law yet. So
well,
what did
I think
you?
That's good. You know, we want decency on the radio, so that's good.
You know, so we are responding by attempting to have a bleeping button, so that we can bleeping expletives. But I think I just have to say, I don't consider. Personally, in my view of life, that is not my national priority.
Hardly.
You know, making sure people have access to the airwaves is way more important to me.
People are more worried about their children, you know, hearing a word that they're going to surely have heard by first grade anyway, than in having a world for them where they won't get drafted and, you know, have to go kill people in foreign lands
again,
and breathe polluted air. And, you know.
In my nice conservative half-immigrant family, my mother made sure I never was exposed to anything like that. The strongest language I ever heard as a child, and I'm very serious, all sides of my family, cousins, whatever, strongest language I ever heard was hell.
You mean even at school you didn't hear words that were
beyond
that?
And then I went to first grade.
I was going to say.
And my very first, I mean, hell was the strongest language I ever heard.
Shock.
Hello?
I heard damn on very few occasions.
Okay.
Very few. And my first day of first grade.
You're on.
I came back into the house.
Can you not hear us, caller?
No, I can hear you.
Okay. Oh. So I came back into my house, and my very first question, when my mother said, how was your school today? And I said, Mom, what does a word I cannot say on the radio mean? That was my first question. I'd never heard it before, and I thought I was good with language. I was stunned that there were words I hadn't been exposed to. So I don't know. Harm? I don't know. So. But your point was something else, wasn't it? I just wanted to point out another huge misprioritization of our nation's attention span. So go ahead. What was your?
Anyway, I think it's a great day, Dave, the fact that we got rid of our Zarqawi.
Well, I mean,
would you not agree that a murderous tyrant like Zarqawi, who's killed thousands and thousands of people, is dead? I mean, isn't that a good thing?
Well, I suppose, but what does it really change? I mean,
I think it's more distraction.
He was a leader in that community with tyrants, and I think they're starting to realize that. I mean, from what we're hearing, one of his own turned him in, and I think they're starting to fall apart.
That's what we hear, but who do we hear that from? Do we really know that's true? I mean, yes. I mean, I read that and saw that on TV, too.
Yeah,
but,
I think it is true because I think it is very true because it's very hard to infiltrate these people's groups. And
but how do you know they're not just telling you that?
What's that?
You have no way of knowing if that's just the propaganda.
Well, I think the same applies to that little cute little story you read about all these women dying.
Was that cute?
You know?
Did you like that?
Yeah, you know, and how do you know that's true? I mean, that's something.
These women were speaking directly to a reporter.
You know, wrote in the KBU closet somewhere. You know
how we know that it's more likely that it's true is it's from the Independent.
Yeah, you know what?
You can't
trust them. You know, it's just not true.
Well, we definitely know that
that's
how he is dead. We saw him, you know, it sure looked like him to me. But what does it accomplish? I don't know. There's plenty of other people willing to step up to be him.
No, it is him because they did DNA tests on that.
I guess, you
know,
here's my point.
And he's dead, and I think it's a good thing. And I mean,
so you think it's a good thing?
Osama bin Laden.
That's great.
But is it going to change anything?
What's that?
Is it going to change anything? No.
Oh, it's going to change a lot, yeah. Because we are...
is our mission accomplished yet?
It is becoming accomplished.
So the war,
see,
the war's going to have an end.
You people don't want to face that. You people don't want
the war's going
to
have an end.
The
Which
fact that
us
evil
people?
Is being defeated. Evil is being defeated, and you are part of that evil group.
Have you been watching Fox
News
again?
How am I a part of the evil group?
How am
What's
I a
that?
Part of the evil group?
I said, have you been watching Fox News again?
I asked how I'm a part.
Fox News.
Well, that explains it, because
a national poll
has shown that people who watch Fox News are very poorly informed.
I watch CBC. I watch all the radios, all the TV stations.
I want to say
that's why I listen to you guys.
I'm asking you now.
Because I
how am I a part of the evil group?
You should answer Ronnie's question.
How am I a part of the evil group? I've been asking that since you told me I was a part of
the
evil group that's being defeated.
You are seditionists. You are against
How
our military.
So?
You are against our
president.
Whoa,
excuse me. Define seditionist.
Seditionist is somebody who goes against our country, goes against our government, against our military.
What about
when
the country's committing
a war
crime? What
about the right of free speech? Speaking out against
Al-Qaeda,
our government isn't
you
the same. Excuse me.
George Bush dead than Zarqawi.
Excuse me. Speaking against our government is not the same thing as being against our country. You are making a very serious mistake there.
You are against the United States.
How do you know? Did I say that?
I've never seen a flag at KBU.
I want to talk. First of all, you have told me that I would rather have Bush dead than Zarqawi.
Yeah.
Okay? I don't want Bush dead. How does that grab
me
you?
Either.
No, I don't. Don't tell me what I think. Don't tell me what I feel.
I want
That's
him to stand trial for
did.
His crimes.
I will tell you what I think.
I do not. No, I said don't tell me what I think.
No, I will tell you what you think, because that's what you think.
I'm interested in knowing how you're in my head, okay? That is not what I think. I would like to see Bush brought to. I would like to see Bush brought to justice.
Me too.
I would like to see Bush publicly tried for war crimes.
He hasn't killed anybody.
Excuse me?
You know what?
He hasn't killed anybody.
With this, we have no basis for debate. We have no basis for dialogue.
Unbelievable.
We have no basis for dialogue. Bye.
Unbelievable. Perhaps with his own hands, he has not killed anyone. He has ordered the deaths of many, many people.
I am more than happy to engage in dialogue.
Oh, my.
But dialogue means you got to listen.
Oh,
and
my.
Listening means, at a minimum, you don't assume you know what I think better than I know what I think.
But he can read your
brain. At a minimum. Because to do so is the height of arrogance, and I have to say, the heck with you. So, let's go on and take another call. 503-231-8187, the number to call. You can join us in our dialogue, our conversation, right about now. Good morning to you. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Morning.
No, that really got me going.
Yeah, I know. It kind of, wakes you up better than coffee, doesn't it?
Well, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Good morning. And can you how do you spell propaganda, right? That guy... Is a victim of a perspective put on the right wing talk radio.
Indeed.
That is a complete falsehood, lies, and to buy into the idea that the liberal left voting community is evil.
Yeah,
those of us who exercise our right to speak out are wrong. I don't think so. That's not what Thomas Jefferson thought.
That's what the right is, you know, has been saying, and now just as much. They for years blaming the left for all faults, and it's like just putting up a straw man, someone so that their voting base, their self-righteous religious people fundamentalists can have someone to blame for all problems, and the people who are committing the problems, and I mean, I do mean our right-wing leaders within the business and church, and can get away with crimes. And that's not what I wanted to talk about, but it got me going. A while back, I called up a cable host and tried to present an argument about fundamentalism and how homophobia is a learned personality trait.
I think it is.
It's learned, you know. And churches, religions, the Christian religion is supporting this learned personality trait, practically.
Well, I think that's a pretty broad brush, I think.
Well,
I think some parts of the organized Christian religion do, certain branches, but others do not. There's definitely a lot of Christians out there who don't support it.
I have to say it's widespread within all the sects of Christianity that they interpret passages in the Bible they allow a fundamentalist interpretation of the Bible, that is a narrow interpretation, to convince their self-righteous followers, the ones who really believe God loves them, for whatever they do, because they believe him, and therefore God loves them. And
that's the reason I played that song to open the show. Jesus loves me, but I can't stand you.
I missed that, but I love that. Jesus loves me, but he can't stand you.
Mm-hmm.
And so anyway, so I was saying it's this interpretation of the Bible that gets it. Now, you can take the Bible and should take it metaphorically as literally, right? I mean, Jesus told parables, right? That's a metaphor. He had to tell his stories as metaphor because the religious people at the time thought they knew what was going on, and lo and behold, they were.
Well, that's the way stories have been told since time immemorial, and also in a culture where very few people were literate. Storytelling was the way that people learned their cultural.
Well, he used metaphor.
Milieu.
My point. He used metaphor, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so. The Old Testament scriptures are the ones where homophobia is taken literally as a storytelling, but fundamentalists take that narrow definition of it and say God destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah because of the homosexuals.
But actually, many biblical scholars believe that what the Bible's alluding to, the reason that God supposedly destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, was because the people there were not welcoming to strangers. They didn't practice hospitality. They weren't behaving in a so-called Christian-like way, and that was the true reason. It had nothing to do with being gay.
I want to agree with you, but add to that argument that the towns, what was wrong with them was far beyond homosexuality in the books. They were murderous society. They were inhumane, and that was what led to their destruction. And that, I argue, was not the fault of the homosexual community of those towns, but the heterosexual community, who were so intolerant, they became misanthropes.
Well, there was a lot of intolerance rolling around. See, that's the thing. Many, many people who practice Christianity have no concept of the historical context of that time and all the very, very diverse things that were happening. There was a lot going on in that region at that time, and
it impacts heavily
on how you interpret the Bible if you understand the historical context.
Exactly. Our religion should teach us understanding. I mean, that's what Christ did. He was forgiving up front. He understood that people were, you know, would fail. We were only human. We face immortality, you know, when we dare. But not immortality, but mortality when we dare. And so he was forgiving. But our churches are teaching intolerance and blaming, finding victims. And this guy, I want to end with a joke, okay? Because you want to hear my joke?
Rock on,
I'm
going to
wind it up. I want to wind it up because I think I've made my point. I kind of think that Pat Robertson and George Bush look alike. They look
sort
alike.
Of do.
Same kind of hair, same squinty eyes, same phony smile, right? And it reminded me of a couple of characters in a Mike Meyer movie. Austin Powers is evil arch enemies.
Yes.
Dr. Evil and Mini-Me, and so that's Pat Robertson and George Bush. You know, they put the little pinky in their mouth and go, George does this. He goes, when he has to perform as president, he puts
Pat as Dr. Evil and Mini-Me.
Yeah, that's Pat Robertson, and they're both, the both of them are power-hungry.
Yes.
Mad, power-hungry people. And so it's
and
George Bush and Pat Robertson, and they're Dr. Evil and Mini-Me with their pinky in their mouth going,
And so would Jerry Falwell be the hairless cat? No.
No, he's, I don't know, he's either Dr. Evil or Mini-Me. Both of them. I can't figure which one. Okay.
Right.
I think I made my point.
Thank you so much.
Maybe he could be Dr. Evil's girlfriend with the bad German accent.
Okay.
Thank you for your call.
Stop.
It's about 8:37 here, folks, and we're going to be here with you until 9. This is Positively Revolting Talk Radio, and we're talking about gay marriage and the specter of the idea that people want to carve discrimination against gay people into our Constitution.
Call it our biggest burning, pressing domestic issue.
Got to stop those gays from getting married and being happy. What can
Wild
I say?
In the streets. They're going to settle down and raise families.
That's right. But see, you know, at 9, we're going to be all done, but you don't want to go anywhere, and I'll tell you why. Because at 9, the Radio Zine is going to be featuring Joanne Bowman. She's so awesome. Interviewing a group of middle school students from Project SOAR. They created a peace project to benefit orphans in Rwanda by providing them with an opportunity for education, and they've been invited to present the project to 12 Nobel Prize winners later this year. At 9:30, Dave Mazza will interview Dan Wakefield, who's a novelist, journalist, and screenwriter. His latest book is The Hijacking of Jesus, How the Religious Right Distorts Christianity and Promotes Prejudice and Hate. I'll tell you, it's just amazing how these dovetail together. We'll also have commentary from Jay Thiemeyer. He'll review the film CSA. At 10:30, the lovely Chris Andre interviews local activist Martha Gies about the future of Patrice Lumumba Ford and the Portland Seven. And at 11 on Democracy Now!, what does the death of al-Zarqawi mean for Iraq? Also, a reaction on his death from Michael Berg, whose son was captured and killed in Iraq 2 years ago. Anthony Riddle of the Alliance for Community Media examines the implications of the Communications Opportunity Promotion and Enhancement Act, or the COPE bill on net neutrality. That's a very important topic. And Palestinian journalist and mother Leila Al-Haddad talks about life in the occupied territories. That is on Democracy Now! And after that, of course, we'll have lovely folk music on Moving On. No reason to leave. Just stick around. And you can be part of this conversation right now by calling 503-231-8187.
And good morning to you. You're on the air.
Good morning. This is Judith.
Good morning, Judith.
We can demonstrate what it's like to have a pro and con conversation.
Okay.
An actual discussion.
Let's try this.
Civil discourse. What a concept.
Hey, I'd like to touch on the bit about English as a national language. I'd like to touch upon the ramifications of the death of Sarkawi.
Uh-huh.
And possibly, if there's time, make comments on the gay marriage issue.
Okay.
Let's talk fast.
All right.
Anyway, well, number one, I think, of course, in America, unlike in, for instance, Europe, we're unused to having four different languages as close as our next state over,
mm-hmm.
and people crossing over continually and being, you know, so we're just not used to that.
That's true.
And I do think that, you know, we do have to, I think the influx of folks that speak in other languages is good for us.
Uh-huh, I agree.
You know, and in all the ways that you have mentioned. I do think that when we talk, and I'm real saddened by the fact that when people talk about making English the national language, they're speaking of it in a punitive way. And apparently in these days when there is discussion, that is their intention to be punitive,
right.
that,
mm-hmm.
that there won't be any accommodations for foreign speakers. I think it's basic that English is the national language,
right.
and if it wasn't done punitively, I wouldn't see anything wrong with saying, hey, we do have a basic language here, you know, that when you come, you need to plan on learning, but not make it punitive so that you refuse any accommodations for people coming in.
Well, I mean, look,
it's really cruel.
I think it's insane.
I totally agree that it's always good to be aware of what the dominant language is in a country into which you are moving.
Yeah.
Whether you speak it or not, it's always good to be aware that, oh, yeah, if I'm going there, I'm going to need to learn this,
yes.
right? When I travel, yes. I like to figure out what languages I'm going to need to try to familiarize myself with. But unfortunately, I've never heard it mentioned in a way that wasn't punitive. It's never been like an oh, gee whiz. You know, I mean, since I first heard about the debate maybe 15 years ago, it was, and it, the very first time it was brought to me, it was in an article that laid it out in a very punitive fashion, and I thought, well, what, where's that mean-spiritedness coming from? Hey, now, you know,
I remember reading about two, or hearing about two women who worked for the city of Los Angeles, and they were Latinas, and on their break, they would speak Spanish to each other, and their boss was convinced that they were gossiping about her in Spanish, and she fired them for speaking Spanish on their break to one another.
Right.
That's outrageous.
I mean, that's wrong.
Right, it's wrong.
Well, I think we all have to know that first generation, a lot of times, family members will isolate, you know, older family members or whatever will be at home. I know my ex-husband, his mother, they were Swedish, and she was relatively isolated, and he spoke Swedish with her in the home.
Well,
the dad, on the other hand, was a little more extroverted, and he took his son's first grade textbooks and learned the English. And so every group's got to get over that hump.
Right. Well, and
there's going to be layers of people, you know, some that hardly ever learn the language, the next one, you know, and it's it takes about two or three generations.
You bring up a really good point. Actually, there are several right there in that. You're a teacher, so you, I'm sure, will really understand my point that I'm going to make.
Sure.
And that is, when kids, when you're dealing with little kids, those neural pathways to learn language or music or math are right there. They can pick it up so quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And they just are so good at catching those concepts, and their brains are sort of trained to think in different ways. But when, say, a person who's, you know, even 20, let alone 40 or 60, you know, says that I want to learn a new language, or I'm going to learn a new musical instrument, or I'm going to learn a new type of math, those neural pathways are already set. And so it's a much more rigorous uphill climb, not impossible.
Yeah.
I think it's much more of a challenge. And so in Europe, it's considered sort of, well, de rigueur, right?
Yeah, everyone
has
several languages.
I know, and I was trying to get a non-foreign word in there, but I couldn't, you know?
Par for the course, yeah.
There. But I don't golf. I don't know.
I know. But it's ironic.
You know, it's
French,
it's considered, you know, basic that you will know at least one or two other languages. Someone pointed out to me, it was Teresa, actually, pointed out to me last week that among the upper class of England, around the turn of the 20th century,
they all spoke French.
It was considered basic that you would speak about five languages. You know, you needed the basic, Latin and French, and you know, this was just to be considered cultured. You know,
everyone spoke at least Latin and French and English if you had an upper class education.
Right.
And they're just the proximity to other languages over there. I mean, kids in Norway hop a train and go down to Spain,
I
was reminded of the bumblebee. You know, the bumblebee is aerodynamically is not supposed to be able to fly.
Right.
Nobody ever told the bumblebee
that. So it flies. So the little kids, you know, they're like the bumblebee.
I remember I was teaching in an ESL class.
Classroom, and it was so sweet. We were doing the ABCs, and these little kids, it was so cute. I had five little bright-eyed, brown-eyed kids look around the table, and we were doing alphabet, and I don't know Spanish. I'm just substitute teaching. But we're doing the best we can there, giggling as we go. And we were doing the ABCs, and I realized that when we went to E, the little kid kept thinking, that came across to me that in Spanish, I believe it was that A is pronounced E. I mean, and he kept saying E, A, E. And then suddenly it dawned, and we all had a giggle what we were trying to do. But but it was sweet. But now real quick, because I know my time's probably expiring, could we move on to the Zakari thing?
Please.
I want to propose that, I mean, I agree with the possibility of your points. I mean, it's about the red herrings and thing like that. But I do think that it could be a major thing. I'm hopeful. I mean, we can hope against hope that this could make a difference. And since the likes of Zakari are the kinds of people that persecute these women who are being so devastatingly, cruelly, persecuted, one might hope, we could hope at least, that this is a beginning, a fracture in the back of that element that would be so oppressive. But it remains to be seen. We won't know until.
Well, I guess I have a couple of things about that. First of all, to be asked point blank if I'm happy that somebody's been killed, I can think of very few exceptions to the statement, I'm never happy when somebody's killed.
Sure.
You know, I don't care.
Well,
who
we'd rather none of this happen.
Right.
Exactly.
I mean, that's sort of that's where
I would have preferred
that
Al-Zarqawi we had a change of heart and resign from Al Qaeda. You know.
Or, well, yeah.
Didn't happen. You know.
Well, yeah, sure. But
ladies,
I mean, that's,
ladies, that you're giving me a red herring now.
No. No, I really just want to follow through for a second. I would prefer.
Yeah.
I mean, so just to be fair, you know, the previous caller had asked me if I was happy that he was killed.
Oh, yeah,
so,
I get all that.
You know, so that I just have to say I can't really get there. Just kind of like I'm not happy when anyone is killed. But I do agree that, you know, that it is important to somehow or another get through the extremism. My fear, though, is that, okay, my fear is sort of twofold. The first one is that this will be trumpeted by the propagandists in this country as, see, we're making significant strides, we're winning now, when in fact the for continued justification for the war, which we'd already been told was over, you know, 2 years ago, mission accomplished, mm-hmm. flight suit and yada, you know. Mm-hmm. So I'm afraid that it's going to be used as justification for, look, we're winning now, when I don't necessarily see that as the case. I see it as, okay, you took out one of your main targets. All right, that's what you did. Look at all the other things that we've lost. Look at how we are continuing, you know, to hemorrhage money and bodies. And look at how the situation for Iraq is worsening overall.
I agree with your point, but I would like to hope that somewhere in this, I mean, I'm a realist like you are in those terms.
Yeah.
But I would like to hope that maybe, since they did get this guy, that maybe it can make some kind of difference, maybe change the direction of things, you know,
like
a ripple effect.
But
we can only watch and see.
I have to say, I really hope so, too, because I'd like to see something happen that starts actually benefiting the folks who are suffering right now under the occupation, both from the American occupation and from the rise of the fanatic extremists, because there's a whole nation of civilians caught in the middle of that.
Exactly.
And so I would hope that this gives some relief. Unfortunately, I fear that history has shown that if you take out one extremist, it only adds fuel to the fire.
Right. And also,
and that the
Haditha
rest of the extremists get a little more upset. And so it's that eye for an eye thing. I have a hard time believing that an act of war eventually brings about good. It's kind of Hiroshima.
We have to be sure that we really have to keep in the front that we don't want our own people to be degenerating into terrorist behavior. If one person does an act, it's terrorism. The same sort of act on the part of their enemy is no less terrorism.
Right.
And we've got to really, that whole bit about, you know, our law here and the separation, all the things we have at home here about the separation of power and our ethics out in the world, that's the fight we have to be fighting here, along with our strict, you know, criticism of what's going on there, keeping an eye on that. But we really, things are out of control here.
Absolutely.
Anyway,
yes,
as far as gay marriage goes, how weak is your faith if you think your marriage is going to be undermined by somebody else's happiness? Damn it.
Thank you.
I just want to give you a practice with that button.
It's pretty pathetic, really, that people are so worked up about total strangers ruining their marriage. Like, get over it.
I mean, how weak are you?
Right.
How fragile. All right, bye-bye.
Hey, thank you so much for your call. And good civil dialogue.
We've got 10 minutes left, and so we can probably squeeze a couple more people in, but we must be brief.
I want to point out that there is an article that says blame for Haditha lies at Bush's feet.
Hear, hear.
And I would recommend people find this. It's by Scott Ritter.
You
might remember Scott Ritter, UN weapons inspector. It is found on either Alternet or truthout.org. Alternet is alternet.com, I believe. It could be a .org.
I think it's .org.
I'm sorry, you're right. It is .org. But truthout.org is also.
Yeah, you can just Google Haditha
right
Scott Ritter. I'm sure you'd find it.
Blame for Haditha lies at Bush's feet. Because we only have 10 minutes left, I will not go into this, but it is an excellent article.
It's your reading assignment for the week. Okay, so next caller, you're on the air.
Hi, on the air, Melody.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. Great show again, as usual. Two thoughts I had. One is, I would actually add this Al-Zaqqari thing to the list of detractions or distractions.
That was kind of my feeling when I was reading about it last night. I was thinking, wow, you know, the rest of the war is going to hell in a handcart. We are hemorrhaging, you know, bodies and money, and not to mention international goodwill. And we're all the war crimes being sort of being brought more before the public eye at this point. And suddenly we have a great victory.
Right.
And it reminded me a little too much of those Orwellian news reports from 1984 where, you know, sad news this week, chocolate's rationed to 13 grams. Sorry, we all got to do our part. Great news this week, we can celebrate because chocolate rations have been raised to 13 grams.
Woo-hoo.
Right.
And we can celebrate the great bounty. And it just, I mean, it just over and over again, when I read press about the war in Iraq, I think we have always been at war with Oceania, you know? So
right.
Thank you, yeah, for that point. But what else did you have to say?
Yeah, so, and by the way, I think, you know, just along those same lines, and another quick thought. So I think, you know, basically, any empire needs its boogeyman, and so, you know, this is why we don't kill the boogeyman until we absolutely have to. So, you know,
right.
Maybe before the 2008 election, they'll kill Osama bin Laden, or pretend to and say they did, even
right.
if they didn't. But anyway, so that's that point. The other thought that I have along the lines of, you'd asked a question earlier, why do folks feel compelled to ban gay marriage? Why do folks get upset about immigrants? Why do, you know, all these different issues? To me, they're all related to the same concept that I know you've talked about many times before in past shows, but it's the difference between the power with and the power over.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And I think our culture, you know, is, or our leadership especially, is all about power over. And any time, in any fashion, where an issue comes up that is going to potentially eliminate the dominant people's power over somebody, or if there's an opportunity to gain power over somebody, you can count on them taking it. It doesn't matter what
right.
it is. They will grasp power over others no matter what. And they'll figure out a way to...
And they think that God wants them to have it.
What's that?
They think God wants them to have power over other people, too. They've convinced themselves of that.
You know, yeah, exactly. I think they really believe that, and that is, in a sense, their religion, that they need to acquire and use as much power as they can. That is what they believe in, fundamentally.
Right, for God.
So, right. And so any issue that comes up, you can count on abortion, same thing.
Yeah.
You can count on them taking the position that maximizes their power over others.
You're absolutely right.
And so I just think it really doesn't matter the platform. You can just watch an issue come out, and they're going to say, you know, we're going to take this because that gives us more power.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with you. Thank you very much for your call this
Good
morning.
Good point.
You bet. Thanks a lot.
And that's an excellent way to frame it. Excellent way to frame it.
It's just really amazing to me that people cannot grasp that, you know, they can decide that, you know, eating blueberries is a sin, whatever. But they don't have the right to make me enforce a law against me and make me believe that eating blueberries is
a
sin and say that I
can't
eat them.
That clear-cut forestry practices is something that would be as closely defined as a sin as
mm-hmm.
I think my spiritual path gets.
Me too.
And yet I haven't been able to stop them.
That's right.
All right, so let's go ahead and...
Because God is none of us.
Wait, maybe we need to have a constitutional amendment to protect my right to enjoy, beautiful natural
but
settings.
You're gay, so you can't have one.
I don't have constitutional rights. I forgot.
That's right.
I prefer queer. Thanks.
Oh, okay. Well, you're not heterosexual.
All right. fair cop. And good morning to you. You are on the air.
Oh, good morning.
Hi.
I have a quick comment about this Zarqawi thing that I'm really utterly confused about. You see, if you watch the mainstream news, which I don't advise anyone to do.
You're here.
They describe how they used two 500-pound bombs to strike this individual because obviously one was not enough.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. He's
now,
a big individual.
And yet he was intact. Isn't
he's
that amazing?
Right, exactly.
Thank you.
He's intact. What, you know, okay, now let me stretch your mind just a little bit. That means that this bomb really probably didn't strike him. Okay.
Right.
Which means that probably he could have been humanely extracted. Do you see what I'm saying?
Well, I mean, and they did show that video of the building and all the area around was, you know, since significantly disrupted by those bombs. And so I did find myself wondering how it was that he was so undamaged.
Exactly.
I mean, he was dead, of course, and yet he didn't, his body seemed relatively
intact.
Well, news reports this morning say, in fact, he was alive when he was first captured or taken.
Oh, okay. So now the bombs weren't necessary.
No, but they looked good on TV.
But he died shortly thereafter.
Okay, so the thing of it is that, okay, let's say if they had dropped one, just to maybe shake things up a little bit, if they had taken him alive, wouldn't he be much more valuable alive than as a dead martyr?
You would think so, because martyrdom is a big...
No, and I was actually... I'm glad you actually said that, because earlier when I was a little too apoplectic to talk, I was trying to come up with that exact... rationale. So I'm very glad that you were able to do it.
Yeah, I found myself wondering the very same thing.
I was trying to scratch my head, going, "Do you have any idea the value that Saddam Hussein has alive?"
Right.
When the fracas started, I was most worried that he would be killed.
Right.
Because I mean, dead a martyr is immortal.
Exactly. I don't know that he would be as much of a martyr as Zarqawi, though, because
that's the caller's point. That Zarqawi is
Saddam Hussein wasn't much admired in Iraq. I'm sure a lot of people would miss him, but Zarqawi would definitely be carved out as a martyr, and more people would rise to the occasion to avenge him and all that.
And I also have a complete solution to the entire gay marriage issue.
Oh, good.
And
stop
it's a very
marriages.
Simple solution, which actually I believe some strange country in Europe by the name of France does.
Oh, well, freedom fries, yeah.
Exactly. Well, what they do is that everything is a civil ceremony.
Yeah.
Men, women, dogs, trees, whatever.
I think that's a very... Many people have
dogs
proposed
and trees?
That we rescind the ability of ministers to do civil marriages. They can do any kind of religious, you're now married in the eyes of Yahweh or whatever. But in order to be civilly married so you can get your, Social Security, you have to go down to the courthouse and do your little quickie thing there like they do in Europe. Yes.
Right. Once we remove that entire dynamic and simply say, okay, all you need for your insurance benefits or for your Social Security is a certificate of union.
The courthouse thing. Right.
Yeah.
Yes,
and
to level it across the board for all
that's a far
couples,
too logical
clear, straight,
and rational
otherwise.
Solution.
Yeah, I thought it was kind of strange myself, but obviously it's French and therefore makes sense.
There you go, Mickey, being logical and rational. That logic and rationality have no place in modern America.
Right, and okay, so then to touch upon the
we have just 1 minute
issue,
left, so go ahead and
touch upon
it.
The language issue real briefly. Since obviously all of the good ideas are coming from the French, I believe our second language should be French.
I like it. Je mange France. Okay. Yes. Thanks.
Thank you
very much.
Bye.
Although, of course, it would be a whole lot more practical to learn to speak Spanish since there's far more Spanish speakers in America than French speakers. But, hey, if you live close to the Canadian border, I think French makes a lot of sense.
What can you
learn
do?
Learn to speak both.
I was going to say, learn to speak languages.
Learning one, learning them together wouldn't be a bad idea because they're both romance languages and they have some crossover.
No, I've tried that. Don't try to learn languages two at a time. unless your brain is different than mine, and most are.
Perhaps it is.
Thanks so much for listening to Positively Revolting Talk Radio, that very radio show that encourages you to revolt in a positive manner, creating positive social change as a way of life.
As
live
a religion,
your life,
as it were.
Live your life, and a good life is the best revenge. Yahoo Queer Pride Month. I want to remind folks that KBOO, your very own community radio station, will be having a Queer Pride contingency. You are welcome.
Contingent.
That's right. Contingent. You are welcome to join us at the Pride Parade, which is a week from Sunday. That's Sunday, June 18th. And we are contingent number 85. If you go to the...
That's a lot of contingents.
If you go to the parade start, we'll have more information about that later. But you can join us and be with the fabulous KBOO float, celebrating community, unity, and togetherness. It's nice to celebrate just now and again. Keeps the spirits up, fluffs the aura, all that good stuff. So celebrate, celebrate, celebrate. Yay!